Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Are we headed for a real estate bubble? That's today's show. Let's get into it. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate show. I am Clayton Morris. This is the podcast where we help you build long-term financial freedom. We focus on cash flow, buy and hold real estate. That's the vehicle that we use. It's not sexy. It's not flashy. It's actually kind of boring. But slow and steady wins the race. So we want you to build that extra freedom in your life to spend more time with your family. And that's what this show is all about. We look at taxes. We look at business entities. We look at the market in general. And today, we will be talking about, well, people throw this term around, this idea of the housing bubble. And are we seeing similar signs to what we saw back in 2006, 2007? So we'll dive into that today with our expert guest. But first, a little housekeeping and a little notes. And I don't usually do this, but we actually had a little hiccup on our website. We had a lot of people trying to book calls with our team over the weekend. Where, you know, if you go to morrisinvest.com, that's just our website, morrisinvest.com, and you click on the schedule a consultation button. If we had a lot of people that were trying to buy properties this weekend and so forth, and the website was down, or we had a problem with our format, our filing system somehow. And so people were emailing us saying, hey, I'm trying to book a call to try to get on the phone, but your system is not working. So our team leapt into battle and got it all fixed and updated. So I apologize. I know that I saw at least 40 or 50 different emails from people who were trying to book calls with our team. So it is now fixed. And if you would like to jump on and pick up your next property or schedule a consultation to learn about, you know, what we do at Morris Invest and to take that plunge into rental real estate, you can go to our website. It is now fixed. So I just want to get that little housekeeping out of the way. So I had so many people asking, is it up? Is it fixed? Is it fixed? Yes, it's back and running. It's back and running. It's amazing too. When like the tech gods, when one little thing goes wrong, it can throw such a monkey in the wrench, a monkey. What is it? A monkey wrench into the works. I don't know, but whatever it is, it screws everything up. So thankfully we got it all dialed in and fixed. And hopefully our federal government and banks have fixed the mistakes that we made back in 2007, 2008, which led us into this massive collapse. That's what we're going to talk about on today's show. My guest today is Brian Klein. He is a real estate journalist. He has written, I don't know, a lot of books. He's written a lot of articles. He always has his ear to the sort of pulse of what's happening in the real estate market. The last time Brian was on the show, we talked about the state of the market. And I said, you know what? It would be great to have him back on a regular basis to kind of talk about some of the trends. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Clayton. It's always a pleasure to be here. And hopefully your audience will gain a few insights from what we discussed.
Absolutely. And so we had a lot of great feedback. The last time Brian was on the show, we were just talking about the current state of the real estate market last year, and it is a new year, and we're hearing people throwing around this term bubble. I've done a couple of YouTube videos recently around this subject and whether or not we're heading for a bubble, signs that I don't necessarily agree with, and I think people throw this term around all the time, right? And they don't really know what they're talking about. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, it is. It has. What is a bubble? A bubble, to me, it just means that prices aren't in agreement with the market, and the market probably needs some type of adjustment. There are a lot of different adjustments that can be made. The last one, we saw housing prices drop dramatically, but it doesn't have to be that way. A bubble could just be more of a stabilization where the prices just don't go up as fast as they have been recently.
One of the things you've been looking at and writing about is that really, if you look at like almost every indicator right now, if you look at all these indicators in the market, what are you seeing?
Real estate's dependent on a lot of different things. And so you're right. I do keep an eye on considerable number of things. Some of them are directly affected by what's going on in the real estate market. And the economy as a whole has a big impact on what happens to the market. The global economy is exactly that. It's a global economy, and you can never be sure what's happening. One of the things I've been watching fairly closely with the prices going up in many places, they're not going up steeply everywhere, but in the places they are going up steeply for the last couple of years, a lot of that's just recovering the loss from what happened to the market during the Great Recession. So at this point in time, it looks to me like they've recovered the money that they have lost, and now they're actually truly appreciating in value the homes that are on the market.
That's great news. Well, I know we're certainly seeing that in our markets where we invest. We don't invest for appreciation. That's not our mechanism. It's just nice icing on the cake. Certainly when it goes up a little bit, that certainly helps and certainly adds to your net worth. And when you look at it on paper, that's great. But we don't invest for appreciation. But again, like I said, it is nice icing on the cake. But you're looking at these indicators saying basically, man, this market continues to thrive, right? As we're heading in towards the summer months and so forth, the big buying season. These look like good things to you, right?
It does. All the indicators are putting pressure on prices going up, and rents are constantly going up right along with the cost of buying a house. And in a lot of places, it's actually, on a month-to-month basis, it's less expensive to own a house than it is to rent, which drives up housing on the cost of housing. So that's an indicator that says prices will keep going up this spring and into the future. How far in the future? I don't particularly have an answer to that question.
Well, what about this idea? And this is how I feel about it. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, all real estate is local. And so when we talk about the idea of a housing bubble, you know, you have to remember that you're also talking about just hundreds and hundreds of different markets around the country. And so what might happen in a San Francisco may have nothing to do with Michigan or Indianapolis or Pennsylvania, right?
Exactly. I mean, the very basic mantra to real estate is location, location, location. San Francisco, the last, probably about the last 6 months, is really pretty much seeing a stabilization. It's very expensive. There's no doubt about that. But prices have quit going up at the rapid rates that they have been going up. And that's one local market. Seattle, on the other hand, their prices have been going up faster than anywhere in the country, and they continue to do so. They're not as expensive as San Francisco. There's still room for growth in that market. The Midwest, there's lots of opportunity in the Midwest. Prices have gone up steadily, but they haven't gone up nearly as fast as they have on the coast, probably. At least those are my observations.
What you went through and were writing very heavily during the collapse, what happened before? And how, when we talk about a housing bubble and then a collapse, what happened then and how is that different from what we're seeing today?
I think it's quite a bit different today than it was. And one of the things that I try to do, I try not to look at what happened during the bubble or during the collapse so much from like 2007 forward to 2011, 2012. Right now, what I'm looking at is what was happening in the 2005 timeframe when everybody was jumping into real estate. The banks were handing out money as fast as they could, and there didn't look like there was going to be a top to it. It just kept going up and up and up. And that's not the way the market's operating today. Today, mortgages are still relatively difficult to obtain. They're getting easier. Fannie and Freddie are actually introducing and rolling out programs to make it easier than it has been the last couple of years. Those are factors that will keep the market growing and hopefully at a steady pace. On the other hand, interest rates are going up now, and that's going to dampen the market somewhat. So I think what I'm looking at it is the definition of a bubble. I think I see forming is more of a stabilization, a plateau, where I don't think the bubble is necessarily going to burst. I think it's gotten about as big as it's going to get for a little while. I think the spring market is going to be a very interesting time to see how all the various factors start to play into the mix.
Right, because as you point out in a recent piece you wrote, the housing shortage is still real. We don't have houses.
Oh, very much. Very much. I mean, new housing starts are not keeping up with demand at all. They're starting to increase, but they're still way off track of what they've been historically. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of relief in sight to fill the need.
And you also talk about foreign buyers. They're still buying real estate in the United States. I mean, we have investors from, you know, Australia and China. We actually had recently like a lot of Chinese investors who are trying to buy up like a lot of the properties that we do at Morris Invest. I mean, so we're selling properties like crazy, but a lot of foreign investors, they're just way overpriced for stuff in their home countries. So what's happening there?
Well, they love the security of the American market for one thing. It's
right.
They know that the risk is so low and the returns are better. Like you just said, the returns are much better than in their own countries. So they keep putting money into our market, and I don't think that's going to slow down anytime soon.
Right. I mean, the same house that an Australian can do for 400,000, you know, is about 50,000 for us. I mean, you know, it's a no-brainer. But you also say, you know, what we don't know could hurt us. And what do you mean by that? I mean, obviously, you talk about this global economy, the idea that, you know, $100 barrel of oil in this global economy, how much can the global pressures affect the local real estate markets?
Well, that's a pretty tough question to answer, Clayton, because there's so many unknowns. I mean, conflicts can break out that depress the global trade market, and all the economies contract a little bit. I think you just mentioned the price of oil could go up, although I don't see the price of oil going up, nor do I think that's going to be long-term. I don't think that's going to be a big bearing on the market. I think we're becoming much less relying on oil, and so it's just something people understand a little more easily, but I'm not watching that too much. One of the areas is right back here at home. The new tax laws that recently changed and affect home mortgage interest rates and property taxes and that type of thing, I think it's going to take at least a year until people go through the entire tax cycle before we even understand what that impact is going to be and what does it mean to people that are looking to buy in? Are they going to buy property? Are they going to just overlook those factors? Are they going to factor them into the price that they offer?
Right.
Go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, I think you're hitting on something that's interesting with the idea of retail home ownership and really investing, right? So my audience and what I focus on is, you know, purchasing properties for the purposes of renting them out, not necessarily for me as Joe homeowner to go and buy. And I think there are kind of two different stories emerging here, don't you think?
Yes, I think we were both about to say the same thing, actually, because that's what I was going to comment. I think the investor that's looking to build a portfolio of rental houses is going to take a much closer look at these tax laws. They're more sophisticated buyers.
Right.
The retailers, on the other hand, they just want to own a home. They see it as a lifetime investment, and they're not as they don't like to look at complex tax laws and that type of thing. So I think they're going to stay in the market a lot more without taking too much consideration. I don't think these tax law changes are going to change the market much, but there may just be a slowdown as people assess what it means to them as investors. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And I also see that perhaps we're entering this period now where because we have a housing shortage, it's difficult to find homes. The first-time home buyers trying to go out and find one, they're having a harder time. The interest rates are going up. It's good news for us as rental investors because in the meantime, rents are going up, they're going to have to rent till they can find the home that they want.
Absolutely. I think just about every major market that I keep an eye on, vacancy rates are well below 5%, meaning 95% of everything available is occupied. And at 5%, that's even smaller than the turnover rate, I think. I wouldn't think it's pretty much the way it is.
Right, and you're hitting this good time of year when a lot of like C and B class tenants, you know, they're getting their tax returns, and so they're looking for a new place to rent, or they're looking to spend 5-6 months of their rent check or their tax return money on paying their rent ahead of time. So it's really an interesting time right now with these interest rates going up, a housing shortage, and there's still, you know, even though there is still this plenty of motivation though to go out and own a home. And this is actually different. I want to touch on this because for the past couple of years, we've been hearing about millennials aren't interested in purchasing a home, right? We kept hearing that story over the past few years, but that seems to have shifted, has it not?
Definitely think so. And the major shifting points is we've always thought of the baby boomers as being the generation that was leading the charge for change. And that has shifted. The millennials are leading that charge now. They're actually outnumber the baby boomers. They're certainly more active in the market. And I think the market needs to adjust to their wants and desires. For a long time, they stayed in the cities. Now I think there's a big trend for them to move out into the suburbs, or if not quite the suburbs, off the top of my head, I don't recall what the new term is for it, but it's like the edge of the city just before you get to the suburb. They want to stay close to the city. And that's one of the things that I think is going to change in the market a little bit over the years. It won't happen in the next couple of months, but it'll change as time goes by.
Well, we've certainly seen it. And let me just give you an example of one of the cities I invest in Indianapolis. We've seen all of these like really expensive condos popping up near downtown. And so for millennials that want to live close to downtown, go to the Indiana Pacers games, go out to all the great restaurants, et cetera. So they want to, you know, they want to be near downtown in these nice new condos. So they've been buying these up and they're really expensive. These are A-class properties. These are not things that I invest in. But what it's done is it's just raised values from there even further out, you know, out into the areas where I invest in the single family homes and so forth. So those are popping up all over the place. We saw those in Omaha, Nebraska. These downtown condos that are, you know, they've got a pool, they've got a big community room, they've got laundry on the, you know, on site and all these types of things. Those have been popping up all over the place.
They have. And that has been the trend for several years. One thing I wonder about is whether the new ones coming online now are just keeping up with the demand that built up over a couple of years, but it's my take on the market that it's going to change over the next couple of years. And although those will stay, there's always going to be people that want all those amenities and can afford all those amenities, the bigger masses are going to have to move out of the city to the edges and out into the suburbs. And I think that's where the millennials are going to start migrating to.
And transforming these neighborhoods. What about low-income ownership? It's been, as you point out in your piece, it's been lower than it's been in more than a generation. And so lower income, middle income, they're driving the rental market right now.
Oh, without a doubt. And there's a pent-up demand for the rental market and to buy homes. It's just another element of demand not being met in the overall real estate market. But then these are the people that they can't afford the ever increasing prices that a real estate bubble creates either. So if their needs are going to be met, there's going to have to be some stabilization in the market. How
right.
That plays out is what we need to learn.
So when you look at, and you know, people say to me all the time, well, like on a $50,000 property, like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath or 3-bedroom, 2-bath, something like that. That's kind of my bread and butter. Those are the properties I love and buy and make up the bulk of my portfolio, as you know. you know, it's hard to get loans. I mean, it's hard to get Fannie and Freddie are making efforts to make, as you point out, more, you know, more low down payment loans. But still, you know, coming out of pocket $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 in order to buy a property, people say, why wouldn't a person just buy that house, that $50,000 house, rather than rent it? Well, if they're making, you know, if they're living paycheck to paycheck, and who has just an additional $12,000 sitting around for a down payment?
Right. And that's the enigma of the lower income specifically. But we've seen some big changes in minimum income laws, and certainly salaries and wages are on the increase. And with unemployment where it's at, there's a lot of upward pressure for people to start, even if they can't buy their own house, they're going to move up into from the one bathroom house to the two bathroom house as a rental. There's going to be some movement upward regardless, I think.
Yeah, we're already seeing it. We're seeing rents come up, and it's been really fascinating to watch this. So when you look at this question of whether or not we're in a bubble right now, what would you say would be the bottom line answer to that? And what can we reasonably expect will happen going forward?
I think there are enough pieces in place with the rising interest rates and the stricter loan qualifications that there's going to be a stabilization period. And maybe demand will begin, supply will begin catching up with demand, meaning we'll get new houses online. This isn't going to happen in the next 6 months, but I think you're going to see the trend of it beginning to happen. I think you'll find some of the bidding wars in the major metropolitan areas that have been happening with houses for sale, you're going to see some of those bidding wars slow down and fewer multiple offers. And only a few people are still going to be able to pay these top dollars for a period of time until supply starts to catch up with demand, and then even that will keep prices stable for a little while. So that's what I see coming. I see some stability coming.
So just some stability, but no big collapse to worry about.
I don't see that happening. I see values going up more in line with what inflation's been doing. Probably a little bit above inflation, but not double and triple inflation that we've been seeing in some markets.
What do you see with baby boomers? You mentioned baby boomers. We talked about millennials. Where do you see them moving, and what communities and areas might be worthy of us, you know, investing in or thinking about?
That's another interesting market to keep an eye on, even though the millennials now outnumber the baby boomers by a little bit. There's still a huge portion of the market, and I'm trying to remember the number. I think there's some like 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day.
Wow.
And that's going to go on for some like, yeah, for 20 years. There's lots of them. And so these people, they're moving into 55 and over communities. They're downsizing. There's going to be a need for some assisted care, that type of thing. I have for the readers of a lot of the articles that I write, for the last 18 months or so, I've been saying that if they're interested in looking at new market opportunities, these are opportunities that are going to grow in the future, be it 55 and over, gated communities, and assisted living type of communities. And one of the preferences that they really seem to want is kind of like the gated community. They like the walk around neighborhoods where they can get out and socialize with other people. They golf courses, tennis courts, that type of thing. Typical retirement activities.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that in some of these different communities where they've got a main central hub where they can hang out, and there's music. And I know there's a place in Florida famously called, you know, the Villages, and I think it's in Orlando. Or north of Orlando, and you know, they've got a DJ who's just playing music all afternoon. And then in the middle of the, you go down there and you feel like, oh my God, these guys are having a blast. Why don't I want to move here? Yeah. And all those amenities like the pools and the walking paths and the tennis courts and all of those things. So it's going to,
I think there's some opportunity, some growth opportunity in that area. Definitely. And, keep an eye on, because the baby boomers have never been particularly, predictable. They figure out what they want and then they go get it.
That's right. Well, Brian, I appreciate you joining us today. So no, we don't have to live in fear, I guess, is Brian's message. If I read him correctly here, that a stabilization could be coming. So some supply that's been lagging behind could be starting to finally catch up with that demand. Those millennials that want those first homes, those first brand new homes, and they've been waiting and waiting and waiting because there's not enough construction. Those will start to catch up and the prices maybe won't keep climbing as quickly, and we'll just stabilize. I like that word.
That's where I see the market going. Time will tell me if I'm right or not, but I think it's a good hunch.
Well, and I'm looking at a lot of the same indicators, and I have to say, I fully agree with you across the board on this. And I speak to a lot of different experts who are not in your circle, and the experts that you speak to and all the data that you're looking at, I'm seeing the same thing. So I hope that we're correct in all of this. So Brian has been investing in real estate for more than 35 years, writing about real estate for 10 years. So he's got a lot of experience in this. Brian, what's next for you? What are you working on right now?
Well, just before we started to talk, I was looking at tax liens, and unfortunately, I also just wrote an article about foreclosures. I don't see foreclosures going up, but for investors, I see it as, you know, don't forget, foreclosures are always happening. They're still out there. So I was just reminding some of my readers to take another look at the foreclosure market or the tax lien market, some things that they don't think about too often.
Good stuff. And we'll have links to everything that Brian has been writing about. He's got some great articles. I always enjoy his research and his writing. And we'll link up all of that in the show notes page at our website. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch up again real soon.
Thank you very much, Clayton. I enjoyed it.
And thanks to all of you. We'll have the show notes page up at morrisinvest.com. Just go to the podcast page and everything Brian and I talked about will be right there. And like I said again, the website is now fully working. So if you're ready to pick up your next rental property or get started in real estate investing by buying your first property, you can just click on the schedule a consultation button and you'll have to answer like 8 questions. We just want to know, you know, your name, your email address, so, and our phone number, so we can contact you at the time that you pick. And then you pick the time on the calendar that you want to jump on the phone. So it's totally up to you when you schedule it. And then our team will reach out. We'll talk for 30 minutes about real estate investing and what your goals are. That's what we do. So that is all back fully working again. And this podcast is always working for you. We're back Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, where we try to bring you as much great content as possible. Experts like Brian, Natalie joins me on Wednesday, where we talk about family planning for real estate investing and taxes and all that good stuff. And then Monday, more of a motivational episode to kind of kick you in the pants, get you real estate investing. So we'll see you back here next time with another episode of the Investing in Real Estate Show. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. It's the best way to build passive income.